Okay. Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Peter.
And it's a short one, and then tomorrow morning we wrap up, and I'm always worried I'm going to forget. So I want to thank you, Dave, for taking good care of me, having me up here. And thanks, Scott, for taking me around and being just a newfound friend. Thank Dave Lester, is a dear old friend. Guy does more for AA and another drunk than most people, quietly. And I'm glad to do this walk with him. So thank you for, he's got a great selection back there, man. So buy some stuff, it's really cool. And last but certainly not least, all of you, for giving me some latitude here this weekend to be a little transparent and be free to talk. Lots of times when you do this, sometimes the direction, not always, sometimes the direction and the depth you go is based on what you're getting back. So I thank you for that. So we're supposed to do a little step nine here and call it a night. The freedom I get to seek is not for me, but from me. And that was a lesson that was hard learned. The freedom was for me, but it's from me. The further away to get from me, the better off I am. I'm traveling a lot lighter. But it means following instructions, and it means going to any lengths, and living life on terms other than my own, God's terms, following rules that I didn't write, and willing to do that. In good times and in challenging times. There's a great story that illustrates that to some degree. There was a man who was very, very religious and did all the things his religion asked him to do, above and beyond the call of duty, and was well respected in his religious community as being a leader of his tribe, if you will. And he wasn't feeling well, and he started going to doctors, and they start running some tests, and he got the news no one wanted to hear, that his time was limited. And this very religious man was irate over the news of his health, and he was going to pass. Irate, and he was furious with God and furious with his church, and just walked away from it all after all I've done. And he lost sight that my job is to serve the cause, not to have the cause serve me. And he walked away, and he fell asleep one night, and he had this dream. And the dream was he was walking on this big field, like a football field, and he hears, as he looks around, he hears singing, and he sees, you know, all these people, a few thousand people singing these Christian hymns and happy in their walk. And then he was really annoyed because not only he, but the rest of them were carrying this heavy cross. And they were doing it joyfully, carrying this cross and singing these Christian hymns. And they were really happy, and they were headed towards this edge of a cliff, and they were about to crossover. And he's even more irate. And he says, these fools, we're going into eternity and they're happy about it. I got to carry a cross to do it. I'm not doing this. And as he's walking, he sees a little barn on the side of the road. And he goes in there, carries his big cross, and he finds a saw, and he starts chopping this cross down to where it's manageable for him. He says, I got over on all in the hell with him. And so he's looking at all these fools singing, carrying this heavy cross, and they get to the edge of the cliff. And in order to cross over, if you will, to heaven, they lay the cross down, and it reaches the other side, and they walk over. And he lays his down, and it doesn't make it. And he's stuck for eternity in that kind of abyss, and that kind of pain, and that kind of misery. There's many times on this walk I'm going to ask to follow directions, and sometimes the any lengths is uncomfortable, and I want to quit, and I want to go home. I want to take my ball and go home. Life's being unfair, and I've heard so many stories, not only in AA, just people in general, but always in here, on walking through what seemed to be a very dark night and a bad storm, and we stay with it, and there's a tremendous amount of lessons that go on, a lot of pruning of the tree, and when we get to the other side, we're almost, always so much better for it, and we think, what if I didn't? You know, what if I didn't make that amends to that landlord? What if I didn't go to confession and make that amends to the church, if you will? The experiences I would have missed. That meeting that my sponsor says, get down as, I don't want to go there. It's a Saturday nights in a church basement. It's a Salvation Army meeting. I want to go to the hot meeting on a Saturday night with the pretty girls. And you go there and something happens in that meeting. You hear a speaker you never heard before and your life's changed. We don't know. But I need to be willing to follow directions, even when the cross is heavy on my back. And where I am currently, I get tired sometimes and I want to kick back and do nothing. But God didn't ask me to carry two crosses. He says, I'll put one on your back, and I do that joyfully. You know, and part of it is symbolically, it keeps you, you know, carrying something heavy, you're kind of hunched over, you're closer to the ground in a place of humility, hopefully. I think it's Dante's Inferno, don't hold me to that, but these prideful people, in order to combat pride in the story, they're carrying big rocks on their back and they're hunched over really close to the ground, and that's the idea, to combat pride, humble, close to the ground. So sometimes God will put me in a situation because he needs me closer to him, put us in a situation, but I can't see it at the time. I'm going through it and it's uncomfortable. And also, it kind of sharpens the tools when those wonderful times happen. You know, money comes my way. I'm not saying I got mine, you get yours. I'm charitable. You know, my dad had a great thing. He used to teach me and my brothers. He says, if you eat steak, make sure your friends are eating steak too. Don't be the only one at the table eating a steak. And if you have the money, make sure you buy a steak for everyone or get something else. He was that way. And I come and tell you, there's a lot of that goes on here. You know, we eat together. We break bread together. We share together. There's no, you know, someone sitting in the throne, the grand poobah. I know a lot of people think they are, but it's just not that way. There's a running joke about the first thing God tells the alcoholic when the alcoholic gets to heaven, God says, you're sitting in my chair. I mean, it's just how we get. You know. So the freedom we're seeking is not for us, but from us. and looking at step nine, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so to injure them or others. That's a mouthful. In step nine, it says, remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we go to any lengths of victory over alcohol. We talked about that earlier and how it works is remember we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. We do it again here. Remember it was agreed at the beginning I'm willing to go to any lengths of victory over alcohol in case I forgot. Because maybe by the time I get to step nine and maybe knock out a few amends, I'm thinking I'm good to go, I'm gold now, and I forget I'm alcoholic. And after then I get to the amends tomorrow. One of the things I was taught was, do I believe completing amends has anything to do with me drinking again or not? You know, how many outstanding, this can make some people uncomfortable, how many outstanding amends I have right, pardon me, I have right now that I could be making without causing more harm and I haven't done yet? Because I'm going to do it tomorrow, next week, I'll forget about it. Oh, I'm not there yet. Oh, they forgot about it. It's a long time ago. How many amends could I, that I'm consciously aware of that I could make? And I won't cause more harm in so doing. And I don't need the whole lot of money to go and say, here it is, but make an arrangement or go see that person or make that phone call. But I haven't done yet. Maybe I forgot I'm alcoholic and I agreed at the beginning to go to Inlands for victory over alcohol. I forgot that part. Because the ego starts to reemerge. Tebow talks about this, the reconstruction of the ego. And I don't know what's going on, but it's happening. You can see it and you can hear it. Start to make my own rules. My level for discernment drops. It's not on a spiritual plane anymore. Now I'm starting to see the world through the mind again. And things are starting to irritate me. And now the people who brought me up in AA, the big book, is they become an annoyance to me because they keep presenting the things I'm not doing to me. the things I should be doing, writing them down, I'm not writing them down, I'm not making amends. I don't want to hear these people. I want to go to the Don't Drink, Go to meetings because I'm the grand poobah there. I can lay some information on them. I'm not doing it, but I can talk to them about it. And so I have this list, and I begin praying to this list, as I said earlier, to every person and every institution on that list. Step 9 is going to say go or don't go, depending on how much harm I'm going to bring to people. I can make amends and cause more harm. And I have a couple of those stories because I was a knucklehead too. There was a young lady I dated many years ago, and I was active, and I harmed her. I harmed her family. They felt they were in love with me. They wanted me to marry their daughter, and I blew that up and caused a lot of problems. And so I'm sober now, and I'm starting the steps, and I think, you know, I'm Moses, and I'm in Brooklyn. I'm driving. I just left the gym, in fact, and I'm driving down this avenue. And I said, oh, my God, that's Mary, we'll call her. Holy smokes. And I pull over, and I get out of the car, and I start making my way to her to tell her, make this amends. Not checking in with my sponsor. I'm not even up to amends yet. And as soon as she saw me, she backed up. She says, my husband's home. He's upstairs. She was afraid of me. And something, that little voice in my gut said, get out of here. You're not supposed to be here. I called my sponsor. He reamed me. He said, how dare you? She had a little son with her by now, and he was like, who's this man? I had no right to do that. So it's really important that I'm getting coached or sponsored here by someone who's done amends, who's experienced with amends, who can say, you can't go there yet. You're willing, yes, that's half the battle, but some of these things I have no right to do. You know, just contacting her from a long time ago and say, hi, remember me, and she might be married with children or it's dating someone, and I'm going to open up this old can of worms, and he might say, who is this guy? You never told me about him, and I cause a fight and disharmony in that relationship. How dare I? I don't have a right to do that. A book says I have no right to save my own skin at someone else's expense. Mm. But I want to get my AA notch on the belt. I go back to home group and say, I made another amends. And I can't do that. So I sought counsel with many of these amends. And my sponsor, they never said, you better not or you have to. They didn't say, forget about that. You don't need to. They need to pray on that. But this is what I would do, they'd say. And this is how I would do it. I have what I thought was a funny amends story. There's a guy, Joe Hawk, and he would always just talk about, where are you with amends? How are you doing with amends? That was his thing. And He came up to New York, and I hadn't seen Joe in about a year, and he walked into this restaurant, was standing there, Joe, what's going on? He's, where are you with amends? That was his hello. It was his opening. And I said, well, I have this one amends that I'm aware of that I haven't made yet, and this is right before Mark starts sponsoring me. I said, but my sponsor said, leave it alone. He said, well, tell me about it. And I told him, you know, back in the day, I really wasn't nice to this young lady I dated, and I took money from her, and I never gave it back, and I cheated on her, and I was verbally abusive, and all the nonsense. He said, why aren't you going? As my sponsor said, it's a really long time ago, and he said, no, let's pray about this. Anyway, I don't know how to get in touch with this lady. This is probably pre-Facebook, and I didn't have a cell phone at the time. And in AA, we used to have, like, they'd give you numbers on napkins, and you had the little AA black book with the phone numbers in it. And I don't know where to start. So I start asking folks who were in AA back in the neighborhood, and it took forever. And someone says, are you looking for Mary? I says, well, I'm not looking for her. I need to make amends. I know someone who knows her, and I got a phone number. Do you want it? And I took it. And I was married at the time, and I told my wife, there's someone I need to go see. I just want you to know what's going on, and I just need to clean this up. She says, whatever you have to do. And so I was speaking in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, at this group, the Sunset Park group. And I get out of the meeting, and I make the call. And this woman picked up on the first ring, and she remembered me immediately. What do you want? And I said, well, listen, looking at my life, I'm sober now, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I realize I've harmed you, and I need to clean this up. And I didn't rehash all the dirt. I have no right to drag someone through the mud. And obviously, I'm paraphrasing some of this conversation. It was a long time ago. And she said, oh, it's a long time ago. Forget about it. It's no big deal. I said, what can I do to make it right? She said, I need some money. I said, how much you need? It was like $50. I says, I can do that. I can mail it to you. No, I need it now. I said, well, where do you live? And she told me it was in this town called Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, which was way on the other side. So I call up Mark Houston, and I says, Mark, Joe told me to make this amends. And so I tell him what's going on. He says, okay, go do it. And so I make my way over. And as I'm getting to the address, I realize I'm in the projects. You guys have projects out here? It's, yeah, you do? These are tenement buildings, and you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in there. And I drive up, and this woman's standing outside with a pit bull waiting for me. Now, when I knew her way back when, she was a looker, and she wasn't now. And she was under the throes of it. I could spot that. Now I put it together. That's why she needs money. Okay. So I get out of the car, and I give her the money, and I start to talk to her about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I start to talk to her about Cocaine Anonymous, because that's what looked like where she needed to be. And she wasn't hearing it. And I wished her well. And that was it. And I got back in the car. I took a deep breath, and I'm driving away. And the cops roll through the projects during the night. And so as I pull out, they pull out of the projects, and they're right behind me. So I made sure I threw my seatbelt on right away. And I come up to the light, and they're right behind me. I make a left, and they make a left and light me up. I pull over, and this cop who was about 2 feet tall, thought he was like, you know, Clint Eastwood or something. And he's, what were you doing there? License and registration. He's just giving it to me. You gave that woman money. Are you a drug dealer? He's accusing me of all this stuff. And it was really getting uncomfortable. And so I tell him, he says, he looks at my license. You live in Staten Island, New York. I says, yeah, what are you doing in Sheepshead Bay? I says, well, I just spoke at an AA meeting, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sunset Park, Brooklyn. He says, hold on a second. You live in Staten Island, you're in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, now you're in Sheepshead Bay. I says, I'm here to correct a wrong that I did in the past. He said, get out of the car. And he wasn't hearing it. I says, look, this is why I'm here. And this other cop who was about 9 feet tall, he says, come over here. He says, is this that amends thing you guys do? I used to wear a coin that had my AA coin on it, and it fell out. I said, look, see, I'm sober. This one. He says, I got a lot of guys on the job who do that. That's my sergeant. Don't talk. Just yes and no. I says, I sponsor a lot of guys on a job. The precinct is right down the road here, and I go to the Sheepshead Bay Group, the Garrettson Beach Group. I go to all these meetings. He's, I know, just don't say anything. Just be quiet. Let him do his thing. And now the van drives up. The unmarked van, and there's a crowd gathering, and I know I'm getting pinched for, I'm getting arrested for something. And I'm a little scared now, but my sponsor knows where I am, and my wife knows where I am, my ex-wife, and so let's leave it up to God. And this cop is probably illegal. He went through my back seat. He's looking under the seats. He opened up my trunk. Probably not legal, but I wasn't going to argue with him. And went through my glove box, and I'm watching this take place. And I'm okay, because he's not going to find anything. He's with all these cassette tapes. Says, that's me and my friend speaking at AA meetings. He threw them away. And eventually I got out of there, and I drove home. And then I call up Mark, and I wanted to tell him a few things. Then I was going to call California out here and call Joe Hawk and tell him a few things about what I just went through on this Annie Lentz nonsense. But, But it was done. It was done. And it was scary at the time, but I laugh about it now. Now, I've been able to make a lot of my first time out. I'm going to say in the neighborhood of 200 direct amends I made financial restitution and things like that. But it's really important for me to show up changed. And it's really important for me to willing to fix the harm caused. For example, if I'm here because I stole your wallet, I'm not a wallet stealer anymore. That kind of thing. And I was a longshoreman. I worked on the docks for a long time. And I borrowed a lot of money, never paid it back. I borrowed money from people that I shouldn't even be around. I used my dad's name, and they want a little bit back each week until you pay the whole thing on. That wasn't good to have these people looking for me. And I stole anything that wasn't nailed down. I was a terrible worker. I come in for payday and leave, that kind of thing. And when I was in step nine, what I would do is I'd carry extra money on me, and I'd wait. I'd get to work really early, and all the truck drivers and the longshoremen would meet in this little diner called the Hole in a Wall Diner. That was the nickname for it. And I would wait outside. And they'd come out and heading back to the pier or getting in their truck, and I would say, hey, Joe, you got a minute? And they'd say, I have no money, because they thought I was going to hit them up. I said, no, that's not what this is about. And I would stand there eyeball to eyeball respectfully and say, listen, I have a different life today. I've gotten help for my problem, and I know I've harmed you, and I have money for you. I borrowed 20, but here's 40, because that 20 is not worth 20 anymore, or 30, whatever it is. And they just kind of look at me. Now, some of them said, oh, thank you, I appreciate it. That's okay, man, as long as you're doing good. And I would do this until I completed this amends list. And you know what happened? There was about a dozen guys. When I started to do this, you see, we make amends in the world of the spirit. One-on-one doesn't always equal two. You make amends about financial restitution, and relationships are clearing up. And it's like that. There's all these weird connections. And what started to happen was guys were coming up to me as I'm doing these amends. He says, where did you go for the cure? That's what they call it. One guy says, that double A place you go to. Because they didn't know much about AA. And I have a son, I have a daughter, I have a nephew, I have a friend, my wife. Can you take her to this place that you got cured? And I did a lot of that work. With the ladies, I told some of the women at home group, hey, come with me, this is the address, we're going to scoop up Joe's wife and take her to a meeting. And I was doing that. I became this ambassador for recovery at work. And it was contagious. I did AA. I showed up early and left late for work. And I worked with my dad for a long time. And, you know, my dad in the old timers, they were at work at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, reading the paper, cutting up, smoking cigarettes, you know, having a good time and drinking way too much coffee. And before the day started, I thought they were crazy. I got sober. I was meeting them at 6 o'clock in the morning to hang out with my old man and his friends and just have some fun before work. Well, what happened is, as I'm making these amends, there was this one truck driver. This guy was like 6'12". He was a monster of a man, big Irish guy. And he had that voice that you could hear a block away, you know, and he was always jolly and happy. And when I was in the throes of addiction, I was doing illegal things, and he didn't want to participate. And I'm 5'11". He was a good 6'6". Monster of a guy, and I reamed him out. I called him names, everything. I mean, he could have picked me up and just dropped me in a hole somewhere, and he didn't. He was quiet about it, and he was on my list. And I'm working, and I hear his voice, and the head said to me, don't make this amends. There's too many people around. This is embarrassing. So the spirit says, no, you got to go. And so in my little outside, it looked like toll booths was my office outside. I go in there, I close the door, I shut the lights, I get on my knees, God, please, just show me what to do here. And I get up and I walk outside, and I went up to him, I said, we'll call him Joe. I said, Joe, you got a minute for me? He's, yeah, kid, what's up? And I begin the approach, and he gives me a bear hug, almost lifts me off the ground. He's, don't worry about it. He's, but I got to tell you something. Unbeknownst to me, he and my dad grew up together. I never knew this. And he started to tell me about how he remembers my mom and dad when they were dating. They were like the hot couple in the neighborhood. and your dad dated the prettiest girl in the neighborhood, and we were all jealous, but me and your dad go back. And we're having this conversation like two men. He says, I got to tell you something else. He says, since you've been getting better, he says, and paying off everybody, he says, your old man sits in that diner every morning, does nothing but talk about his son, Peter. And my dad would say, my son beat it. That's how we refer to beating this disease. They knew nothing about recovery. He beat this thing. And he goes to work. He looks good. And it's my son and this kind of thing. I didn't know any of this stuff. The moral of the story is we walk the walk. That's the sermon. It's contagious. People can feel that. They can hear it. They can see it. And people who are really close to us, we become attractive to them, and they want to talk about the way we want to talk about what we're doing. They want to talk about what we're doing. It's so contagious. My younger brothers got into therapy, got into church, got into Al-Anon. They sought out their way of getting better. And things were changing on at work now. I'd get there early. I'd wait for the foreman, whoever's in charge, say, kid, go home. No one's here. We're done for the day. I would do that. I wanted to leave many times early when work was slow. I'd hang out like an AA meeting. And I'd sweep or do stuff. And it was, you know, quarter after five. And they'd say, go home. Everyone left at 4:30, and I'm still there. I don't say that to brag. It's just the lessons I learned here. Show up early and leave late. And I became reliable, and I even got respect. In fact, these were men who wanted nothing. They didn't want to touch me. They didn't want to come near me at the end. They knew what I was up to. And I was doing bad things. And July 14th is my belly button birthday. And I show up for work one day on my birthday. And I said, where is everyone? And I hit, hey, kid. They're waving me over. Into this, like I said, we have these toll booths that we kind of worked out of and keep us warm. We have a little desk in there. And there's about 10 of them there. And there's a rough-looking crew. No one's really pretty. And they call me over, and they call me into the booth, and they have this dilapidated cake with a wooden match as a candle, and they start to sing happy birthday to me, to wish me happy birthday. And, you know, they gave me hugs and high fives and things like that. And I realized how far AA has taken me. Because I wasn't running around with a big book at work and say, find the Lord. I was just showing up early and leaving late and doing a day's work. I went to work and worked. I was paying people back the money I owe them. I wasn't participating in illegal activities. They were still going on, those activities, but I wasn't partaking in any of that stuff. I can't anymore. So that stuff kind of has this ripple effect. And it's really interesting because when I completed the last amends that I was aware of in that environment, I don't know, it was about 6 months later, my first hero, if you will, or one of my first heroes in AA brought me into the business. I used to go to his aftercare group, and he says, you need to go to school. I need to teach you. You're going to be good at this. I said, good at what? Treatment? I want no, I've been in enough treatments. No, you need to do this. And as I completed my last amends, this guy Vince D took me under his wing, and that's what I've been doing for the last 30 years in the business I'm in. That's been my career path. So it's unbelievable how God navigates us if we listen and we're open to being changed and to be moved. I made, my sponsor encouraged me to walk it out with my dad before I went up to him and made amends, because he heard every apology known to mankind from me. I'll never do it again. I'm really sorry. I'll never do it again. I'm really sorry. I changed, and it went like that. And it was futile. It was worthless. And he says, walk this out before you do it. That's how I would do it. And I did. And I owed him, if I hit Powerball, I'd probably still owe him a few dollars. I mean, I was into him for a lot of money. But I saved what I could. And again, another white envelope and put money in my dresser drawer and showing up with that. And one morning, I met my dad, like most mornings, for breakfast. And I asked him, you got a minute for me? Can we talk? He said, of course. And I began my approach. And I'm into it for like a minute. And I take out this envelope money. And he stopped me. And he said to me something I'll never forget. He's all I ever wanted was my son back. This is a guy who would go to family group and treatment, and the therapist would tell him, you need to do this with your son, and he pushed him right back. Don't tell me how to raise my son. You know, the clergy would tell my dad, you need to let him go. He said, don't tell me how to raise my son. He was very strong about that. Don't tell me how to raise my son. He's my son. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, my dad told me, you do whatever those people tell you to do. He turned me, if you will, over to you. That's how much trust he had in me, because he saw what you guys were doing for me. And when he came to my AA birthdays, he saw how you guys were walking. He totally believed in whatever we were doing here, because he knew he couldn't fix me, but AA could. And that relationship changed on a dime. It was starting to change for the better, and after I made amends and continued to walk this out, that relationship was really turning to be something. Less and less and less was I afraid of my dad, and more was I able to have a conversation. I always respect him as a father, but it became cordial, became more than cordial, friendly. To many times my dad sitting with me the last few years of his life and telling me about his fears and his concerns and his mistakes. And it was a time where he said, I made a lot of mistakes with you. I didn't know how to raise you in my first. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was too tough on you many times, you know, too aggressive with you. I just wanted to see you do. And we had this talk and we aired this stuff out. And through that, there was a bonding. It all came out of me sitting with my dad and showing up to clean up the wreckage of my past. I didn't have to, you know, look down and be ashamed anymore. Not proud of it, but I wasn't ashamed anymore. It is what it is. It's really important that I'm leading with the spirit now. I'm leading with the soul, and I'm walking this out. It's easy to sound good if you get some information in Alcoholics Anonymous and drop some pearls in the meeting, but the real testament is out there. You know, Homes, Occupations, and Affairs, a big book says. What does that really look like? An AA angel in the house, devil. What does that look like? You know, would I bring in my coworkers? Would I bring in my wife? Would I bring in my family to have a conversation with you guys while I'm not in the room and find out who I really am? I'll have that meeting. But there was a time where I'm not calling that meeting. That's not going to happen. Because they know the real me, you know the fake me. But it's all the same now. And I went back to employers, a couple of them. I couldn't go to all of them. I went to my brothers and my grandparents, and I was able to, little by slowly, start to clean up the wreckage of the past. Now, this is not in my time, yeah? It's not in my way either. And there was a young lady I dated, you know, the first love? And Italian family from the other side, very strict. This girl was a genius and a good girl. You know, we meet them once in a while. And I dated her for a few years, and I went really bad. And the last time I saw a father, he was working on, there's a famous spot called Delancey Street, Orchard Street in New York. And he was a tailor in one of the places there. And I'm rolling through the streets, and I see him. I hit him up for $20. He gave it to me. Just looked at me like, what the hell happened to you? And I'm sober 20-something years at this point. And I had just gotten on social media. I didn't want to go on this Facebook thing. My boss told me, you need to go on there. It's good for business, he told me. So I do it. I don't know what the hell he was talking about, but next day I know I'm on Facebook. And one night I'm on there, and I get one of those instant messages, I think they're called. And it's this young lady. Is this Peter Marinelli from 70th Street? I says, yes, I recognize him. She says, I thought you were dead. And so we're doing this, and you know, back and forth. She says, can I call you? I says, yes. And she says, what happened? My family still talks about it. We thought you died. Your family moved away. We really thought you were dead. What happened? And I told her the whole story. I said, I'm really glad you called, because I've been praying that God would put you in my path, because I need to make amends. She says, what's that? And I explained to her what amends was all about. She says, oh, please, we were kids. Don't worry. No. I did some damage. I just need to talk to you and make amends to this. And I'm talking to her about, she says, what is alcohol? What do you have? She says, you mean you can't drink? I says, no, I can drink. I just can't stop. You know? And she says to me, oh, my God, I knew it. It's my husband. And she explained to me our husband's behavior in drinking. She says, would you talk to him? I said, of course I would. And she says, I'm going to talk to him tonight. And she hit me up a few days later. He almost ripped the house apart. I said, that means he's probably a real alcoholic, you know. And that's the last I heard of it. But that amends took about 20-something years to get in touch with her. And it came accidentally. I was in a treatment center 7 times in Amityville, Long Island. And I did the getaway. I ran away one time. I ran 100 yards the wrong way. The front gate was right there. I went 100 yards the wrong way. And the guy, we were taking us from the treatment center over to the little fitness center to work out. Detoxing, work out. It's good for you. We couldn't even walk. And they take 15 clients, crackheads, junkies, winos, to the gym to play basketball. And the ball, the gym guy threw the ball, here, let's play. And we all sat there and watched the ball just bounce. And it was like, I'm not getting it, you get it. And the crackheads were still, you know, tweaking. I'll get it. Yeah. But I made my getaway, and this guy was in pursuit of me, and he's chasing me. And he's saying, Pete, come back, Pete, come back. I didn't know he was a marathon runner. He could have ran forever. You know, I'm detoxing, trying to run. And I get to the gate, the wrong gate, and I'm out of breath. And he says, Pete, please come back. Don't do this. Just let us help you. And he's pleading with me. I gave him a couple of really ugly words, and off I went. When I came back to treatment, they called me, they staffed me, and they said, do you realize the trouble he's in? From HR. He got written up, you were a liability, and just all this stuff. I really don't care. I get sober, I care. And he was on my list. And I called the hospital, and they said, he's not available, he's on vacation, he doesn't work here. Even wrote a couple of letters. I can't get in touch with this guy. My sponsor said, leave it alone for now. God's time, God's way. Well, I was working for a treatment center in Texas, and I hate marketing. I had a marketing job, but now I know why I was given a marketing job. And I'm doing the Northeast region. And I went back to my alma mater, my treatment center. And I had like a 2:00 appointment. And I get there. It was a long drive from where I was living in New Jersey to Long Island, New York. A really long drive. So I anticipate traffic. And there's no traffic. I get there like 2 hours early for my appointment. And I'm embarrassed. I don't want to walk in 2 hours early. I'll go to the diner. And I can't drive the car to the diner. I'm compelled to go in early, and I don't know why. I said, I'm going to look like a fool. I grab my duffel bag. I'm walking in 2 hours early for a scheduled appointment. And then I realized when I got to the door, why? Because who's walking out is that counselor who's a gym teacher. And he remembered me. His name was John. And he says, what's going on? I told him why I'm here. And he says, fabulous. I said, I've been trying to reach you for the longest time. And I had this conversation with him. And he was just happy. I'm sober. I was sober 17 years at the time. It took 17 years to locate this guy. And I made this amends. And he gave me a big hug, like we do in AA, wish me well. And he says, I just came in today for my check. I'm not here every day now. But I was just here to pick up my check, and I'm out of here. If you would have been here a little bit later, you would have missed me. I says, no wonder why. This is God. Just, we're going to rearrange it this way today. Pete, it's not on your terms. Go in early. You're going to miss him. I could have been pigheaded, gone to the diner and said, when am I going to make this amends? He was waiting for me. Intuitiveness comes from being current. I was very current up until that point. The head tried to get in the way of intuitiveness. Intuitive won. God always wins. I couldn't go to the diner. I tried. I was going to drive away. Why can't I get to the diner? I'll go in early. Sometimes it feels like I'm standing alone. We're standing alone. We're the only one who's doing the work. No one else is doing the work. No one else is making amends in my home group. No one's talking about amends. No one's talking about God. No one's talking about prayer. No one goes to church. Oh my, I'm standing alone. And then I look around and I realize there's a whole army behind me doing the same thing. I'm not alone. We meet what we call in AA, we get into these pockets of enthusiasm and like-minded folks. And if I'm truly awake, I will cultivate that and get the naysayer to say, what you're doing, I want. So I say, come on in. That's my job. And I say, oh, they don't do the book, I'm not talking to them. No, I want attraction, not promotion. Cultivate that. I have to ram a big book down someone's throat. I used to do that. It's ineffective. But just talk about what God's doing for me, what AA is doing for me. That doubting Thomas who's in enough bondage and say, can I talk to you? Can you help me? June 23rd, 1988, my dad found me standing on a street corner. I don't know if I shared this the other night, but I prayed to God for help. Please take me from this. I don't want to die. In the back of this abandoned building. And later that afternoon, my dad found me. What I didn't know was, and my dad talked about this story often, he would get very emotional from it. Earlier that day, around 2 or 2:30 in the morning, my dad was, as he called, jawed out of his sleep. And he was in Atlantic City, New Jersey, with his wife and, you know, gambling and seeing some shows and just a little getaway. Around 2:30 in the morning, he was jawed out of his sleep, and the message he got was to go find me. We hadn't seen each other for a while. I didn't see my family for a while. And as he's getting dressed, his wife woke up. He says, where are you going? He said, I'll find my son, Petey. Where are we going to find him? He said, I don't know. I just need to go. And off we went. It's a long drive from Atlantic City to the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It's a long, long trek without traffic. And he's driving through the hood looking for me. And later that day, there I am standing on a corner, tore up from the floor, but my dad drives up, and the first thing comes out of my mouth, he's Peter. And I said, I'm okay, Dad, I'm fine. I'm falling apart. Not like, hey, Dad, you know, we got some money. And he got out of the car and walked across the street and towards me. I can't even fathom what that must be like to see your son firstborn. I'm an Italian-American family, first male born. That's a big thing. I was supposed to be Pope or President, by the way, and I wound up to be a drunken bum. But he's walking across the street towards me, and when he got to me, I kind of went limp. I pretty much collapsed and fell into his arms, and he had his hands under my arms holding me up, and he kept saying, I'm not going to lose my son to this, over and over and over again. Fast forward. I'm walking this out, living this way of life. Not perfect, but living it. And trying to be a son to my dad and a brother to my brothers, etc. It's living the amends, not just showing up, but living it. I've been changed because of God and AA. And my dad, in his heyday, went about 6 foot, 220. Strong man. Tough guy. Legit tough guy. And he dwindled to about 115 pounds at the end, and he knew it. It was killing him, the condition he was in. And he was in the hospital, and he was pretty much bedridden or in a wheelchair. And this was difficult to see. And I was sitting with him the last time I saw him, and we're just having a conversation. I'm trying to make light of a lot of things and trying to cheer him up. And he says to me, he was sitting in a wheelchair, I'm tired, would you put me in, help me get into bed? He said, I don't want to call the orderly. He was embarrassed by people helping him do that. You know, they had to get him in the shower, it was killing him, seeing this this happening. And I said, absolutely. And it was interesting because I leaned over to get him out of the wheelchair, and my hands went under his arms. And I lifted him up. And I had this thought, like, 35 years ago, his hands were under my arms because I couldn't stand. And I was in this position to make this right. and give my dad some grace and dignity. And when I did that, I said, oh my God, I think I'm doing the right thing. And I lifted him up and I got him into bed. I made some jokes about the, you know, I'll call one of the hot nurses in later on, give you a rub down. And he's just trying to take away some of the sting that I knew he was feeling. And we talked a little bit and he was falling asleep. And I let him go. I told the nurses he's going to sleep. And that was the last time I saw him. I spoke to him once on the phone a few days later. And a few days after that, he had passed. And it's just interesting how this stuff plays out for us. When we're awake, we're talking about sound asleep, or Anthony DeMello say, I think I'm awake, but I'm sound asleep going through life. I awake enough to do things like that. Completing amends, I get to enter the world of the Spirit. As I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past, I walk into the world of the Spirit. Everything's changed. Experientially, some of us can talk, many of us can talk about what it's like living in the world of the Spirit, what that feels like, what it sounds like, what that looks like. But I need to do some work before I get there. And that's cleaning up the wreckage of my past. How can I live now knowing how I lived then? How can I be present when I'm driven by the voices of the past? I can't. I can't live now in a place of ease and comfort when I know how I lived then and it's still live. I haven't cleaned that up. I haven't made an attempt. And some of the amends in the past I couldn't go to because I caused more harm, like going to some employee and say, hey, I stole a lot of things and implicate a lot of other people. I couldn't do that. I couldn't go to some of those girlfriends and say, hey, here I am, because they were married now. I can't cause more harm in so doing. So what do? I become a good worker and I don't steal. I practice fidelity in my relationships. And in AA, unless someone is lying, there's not one person could say that Pete Marinelli, you know, crossed the line with any ladies in AA. That's a fact. And, you know, sometimes, you know, they kind of saddle up to you and they bat their eyes and I need a sponsor, you know. And I say, my wife is sitting right there. Go talk to Marion. She's sober 35 years. Go talk to her. I don't do that dance. I never have. And that part of it I do now because that's the way God made me. But I did it for a while because I don't want to be that guy anymore. And this is too sacred in AA for me. I'm not going to play in here. I don't play out there. I'm not going to play in here. I got just a couple of minutes here. On page, oh, Lord have mercy. I'm tired. Okay. Yeah. It says if we're painstaking, with great care and thorough, that's painstaking, having just checked boxes, about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. Now, we read this at a lot of meetings, but we don't even hear it anymore. We hear it so much, we don't even listen to it. We don't hear it until you're doing it. I'm going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I thought I was free. Until I embark on this part of this development, this journey, and realize this is freedom. I don't regret the past anymore. In fact, somehow my past has become a great asset in working with the drunk or their families. I don't want to shut the door on it anymore. I was told, oh, forget the past, leave it in the past. No. When I tell you what it was like, I'm talking about my past. When I'm sitting with a drunk and they say, I've been doing this, I can tell them I did too. I don't want to shut the door. And it becomes an avenue, it becomes a vehicle to work and help others, including families. And God has given me enough where I'm not proud of it. I'm just not ashamed anymore. I'll comprehend the word serenity. I know serenity. That's how I can comprehend it. It's not some serenity. I wish I had some. I wonder what's that like. So what is serenity like? I know it. I understand serenity because I've tasted it. I also know the opposite of it. That's how I know. I know turmoil. I know sleepless nights. I know that really well, like a lot of us. And I step into the serenity thing. I like that. I like the effect produced by it. And it's not because I have $1 million in the bank and I have a brand new car. I'm married to a woman I adore. I'm a really good relationship with my brothers. I put my dad to rest with dignity. I have wonderful friends in AA. I'm squeaky clean at work. That's serenity. The only thing I don't sleep at night is when my head, I start listening to the head. If I start thinking about how many years I got left to live, oh my God, I'm gonna die. You know, that kind of thing. I start listening to that narrative. It's never good. I'll comprehend the word serenity. I will know peace. In fact, I recognize peace. Look at someone and say, they're in a good place. You can sense it. Do you ever go somewhere and you can feel a vibe? You know, whether it's a group or a town, you say, there's a good vibe here. There's something that's right here. I know it. I can sense it. I can feel it. I'm awake to it. Last night I said there's three places I'm most comfortable and I do my best. Here, in church, and when I'm with my wife. When I'm around you guys, when I'm in church with my wife. I just know peace. I can feel it. I can see it. I don't know about that back row back there. I'm not so sure about those guys. Just kidding, guys. No matter how far down a scale I've gone, I will see how my experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness will disappear, and self-pity will disappear. God's put me to work. You know, no more self-pity. I'm working with others. I'm getting out of my own way. I'm of service. I have a servant's heart. God's given me a servant's heart. I'm charitable. There's no pit stops for self-pity. I'm not useless. I get to my meeting maybe an hour early and set up. I stay a half hour late and break down. I'm a greeter. I'm a GSR. I'm a DCM. I'm the chairing. I'm speaking. I'm whatever I'm doing. And my group's waiting for me to show up. And tomorrow night we're going here and Saturday we're going there. I'm not useless. I'm not on page 52 anymore. In fact, I'm walking in the sunlight of the Spirit because I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past. It's unbelievable what happens to folks. We speak to folks who are making amends, who have made amends, completed amends, and folks who is not in amends. It's two different walks. I want to know God, clean up the wreckage of my past. How could I get to experience God when I'm weighed down by my misdeeds of the past? There's a huge weight on my back. I can't float. It says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in my fellows. We talk about that on page 63. Way back on 63, we're talking about this. It's come to fruition here. Self-seeking will slip away. It's not about me. I don't need to be the big guy on campus in the AA. I give respect, I get respect. Good enough. My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. And it isn't for the worse, it's for the better. It's unbelievable how, and I'm a half glass empty guy. That's me. It's half empty. I need a whole glass. AA has given me some new eyes to be grateful for a half a glass. I still want a whole one. I want to be plentiful in everything. But I walk away grateful for what I have. And get to sleep at night that way. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Not because we're rich and have an abundance of money. Some of us get rich. But economic insecurity, that fear, keeps me up at night. Little by slowly starts to go away. Now, I'll confess with you, money, God has kept money, like money away from me. I've made a living. And there were times where I've had a really tough time because the bank account was anemic. It's been like that. And there have been times where I'm up at night saying, how am I going to pay the rent? You know, what class in AA did I miss when they handed out the brochure, How to Be Rich? I missed that topic meeting at home group that night. I don't know what to do. I'm working like a dog and I can't get even. And I can't pay the rent. I've had those. And after I worry, and after I drive myself insane, it's on bended knees. God, please, my life is yours. Just tell me what to do. And I gain strength from God. All men of faith have courage. And in that place, I needed to have courage to have faith. The scripture says, be strong and courageous. They don't necessarily mean strong where I could bench press 300 pounds. Strong in here and courageous. Because sometimes life's going to come at us. And I need God, go to God, to make me strong and courageous. Some of us have, you know, sometimes we get this great intuitiveness that we're awakened to something. Or maybe we have a meditation and something burst upon us, this vision, some clarity. We hear God talking to us. That kind of big stuff we're going to need for something big that's about to happen. And not necessarily bad stuff. It could be something good. And God's getting us prepped for this thing he's about to do for us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. What a tremendous promise. I interpret that most of the time. I'm not afraid of life anymore. We will intuitively know in here, because I'm current, how to handle situations that one time I didn't know what to do. And sometimes I handle it by calling up a sponsor or an AMM and say, what do you think I should do about this? It's so simple. Pete, you don't like that. Do this. Oh, yeah, thanks for calling. Have a nice day. It's so simple. And sometimes it just comes to us. One more story and I'll get out of here. I was living in Boca Raton for a long time, and I had my company a few towns over. And I got an offer to merge with this other company. And at the same time, this huge company wanted me to come on board with them in Tampa. One means I stay local. The other one means I move from South Florida up to Tampa. And my wife and I, you know, the numbers were okay. They weren't out of, you know, crazy, but they were attractive. And so we went up to Tampa, not once, twice, three times. We spent some time on their property, met everyone, looked around for housing, where we're going to live, and we're doing this thing. At the same time, I got folks where I live throwing me these, you know, how about this contract, how about that contract? We don't know what to do. It was baffling. And my wife and I are moving to Tampa. Every hour, we're moving to Tampa. We're going to take the deal. No, we're going to go back home. No, we're going to move to Tampa. No, it was just going on for like 2 or 3 days. And we're in the hotel room, and we're exhausted. What are we? Let's move to Tampa. It's going to be great. 10 minutes, I don't want to move to Tampa. Let's stay home. And the two of us looked at each other and said, we haven't prayed about this. It was like, okay. So the two of us get on our knees. We're holding hands. We're praying. And Marion's leading prayer. And we got up. I says, Marion, we're going to do nothing. We're not calling anybody back. We're going to see what God brings to us. Let's just listen. And we drove home. Over the following week, one company, everything they were telling me started to change. The numbers changed. My position changed. The merger changed. I said, I'm glad I didn't go to Tampa. Now, I did merge with another company that I walked away from because it didn't turn out to be good. Both deals were not good. But what I did with Marion was turn into God and ask God, what do I do? I'm really glad that if I moved to Tampa and that deal exploded, what do I do now? I just bought property up here, or I'm renting up here. It's like a 4-hour drive from where my tribe is. And I stood local. And now my company's doing fine. We're freestanding, autonomous, if you will. Intuitiveness comes from being current. I get that from God. And life doesn't baffle me all the time. So I chop wood and carry water. As of right now, I mean, it's the night is young, but as of right now, I can't tell you that I have outstanding amends that I should be making, and I haven't. That doesn't make me better than anyone. It's just where I'm at. I can't think of an amends. You know, I got one that I need to go do this. It doesn't. Now I'm gonna go through the steps again, and something might show. I don't know. But as of tonight, I'm someone who's free. Free of my past. It makes prayer a lot different. It makes personal relationships with others a lot different. It makes, just makes life different. I travel light rather than heavy. So I think I'm out of time. Where is he? Great speaker back there is coming up in a little while. I think that's him back there. And so I'm going to get out of here, and I'll see you guys in the morning. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777. Or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.